Welcome to Tara Tea. I'm your host, Tara, and today we are finally covering 2021's Antlers. This is another one of my most look forward to films, like Candyman and Halloween Kills before it, mainly because I had a feeling watching the trailer of what the creature is, and I won't get into it yet. Maybe you had the same feeling I did, but I was really hoping for it, and then seeing this did not disappoint. I'm very, very excited to go over this movie. Antlers is another one of those films that was pushed due to COVID-19. It was actually originally filmed in 2018 and was set to release on April 27th, 2020, but because of COVID, it was pushed back to October 29th of 2021. Like all of my movie reviews, we are going into full spoiler territory, so if you have not seen Antlers, check it out and come back to me. One quick thing before we get started. There is not a flat out, like, this happened, but it is hinted to somewhat graphically that there is sexual assault on a child. You don't see anything other than, like, the aftermath of, like, it's hard to explain until we get into it, but that is a part of this movie, and I would hate to tell someone to go see this movie and not warn them of it, because I had no clue that it was in this movie. And when I saw it in theaters, one, it took me completely out of the movie and made me so uncomfortable. And two, it just catches you so off guard when it happens that, like, I wanted to stop the movie. Like, I wish I'd been watching it at home so I could have paused and, like, taken a second to, like, get away from that, because it's not something that I want to see in a movie, and I really hate when it's put into movies for no reason. And I feel like that's kind of the case here. I do want to let you know, because like I said, I would hate for someone to say, oh yeah, I listened to this podcast and she's going to be doing an episode on Antlers, so I want to check out Antlers, and then see that and be upset or triggered or anything like that. I would feel awful. So to start it off, that does happen. I will warn you when we get to that point that it is happening, and I will also like say it is now over. So you can, like, skip it and fast forward if you want. Totally get it. Again, it is not... visually, you see nothing as far as, like, with the child. It is all with the person. And it'll make more sense when we get there. But without further ado, let's get into it. The movie begins with a passage being recited in a native language. Honestly, I don't remember what all was being said, because again, this is in theaters. It's not through a home release where I could kind of catch it easily. I just know at the end it says, and pray that it doesn't want you, which is also the tagline of the movie. So we see a Pacific Northwest coal town. A little boy is walking around hitting pipes, and then he hears something and takes off. He climbs into the car and closes the door waiting. His dad comes out of the mine, unaware that his son has ever left the vehicle. The boy, whose name is Aiden, tells his dad, Frank, that he heard something, and the dad said it's just them working in the mines. Aiden asks why he can't come, and the dad said that it's just too dangerous and to not leave the truck or drive off with it. His dad goes back into the mines and puts on a gas mask. As he's walking in, he hears a strange sound. He turns on a flare, because of course it is super dark in this mine, and he keeps going, and it's with a friend. They both start to hear weird sounds, and Frank says it has to be some sort of animal. They head deeper into the mines to try to find it, and they try to shoot at the animal, but it's too late and they're attacked. Aiden hears the sound and gets out of the car and goes into the mine and calls for his dad, and when he doesn't answer, he goes inside. And you know that this creature is coming because you start seeing, like, it looks like in a, like, a fire pit, how you'll have pieces of fire and ash that kind of fly into the sky. You'll see that around the area. We cut to Julia. We see a little title card that it's been 3 weeks. She's a teacher who is in the middle of doing a storytelling lesson. We found out we're in Oregon, and she talks about Native Americans and how they tell their history and their heritage through storytelling. Most of the kids are not interacting with her. She calls on Lucas, who's actually Aiden's older brother, but he won't answer her. We see another kid named Clint get Lucas's attention and mimics humping a stuffed animal. The bell rings and Julia tells him that they have to write a story, a myth, something. So Lucas goes outside to find the monkey in his backpack. He walks home. It's a long journey. It takes him towards the mines, along some water. Like, he goes for a while. Lucas stops and sees a skunk, so he picks up a rock. He ends up killing it off screen, but the thought is that he beat it to death with this rock. We later see him carrying the dead skunk home, and he listens at a padlocked door to see if he hears any thumping or anything like that, and he ends up opening it. We cut to Julia at a grocery store eyeing some liquor bottles. She doesn't end up buying any and goes home. She's recently moved back into her childhood home with her brother Paul, who's the sheriff of the town. She walks around and looks at the piano, and we get flashes of her being a child hiding under the floor when Paul comes home. He asks how she is, and when she says the same, he tells her that it may take a bit for the kids to warm up to her. She says that it's not how she thought it would be. Once Paul goes to bed, she removes the photos of her father and lays them all face down. We then cut to Lucas, who's holding a photo of his family. His father has been folded down, hiding him from the picture, so it's just Lucas, Aiden, and their mom. Lucas picks up the monkey from school and ends up cutting its head off. We start hearing rumbling and something shaking the door. The next morning, Julia is downstairs when Paul comes downstairs to take medicine. Julia has moved it and he asks her not to. She says she was just trying to give them more space and says she'll be moving out soon. He says that he didn't ask her about that and he's just stressed because he has to evict a family. She says she wishes that he wouldn't have ran. He tells her it's not a job that many wanted. So we can see that there's kind of tension between them, and at times it feels like there's part of the movie that's missing because there is tension and there's a story there and we have no idea what's going on. And Paul is a character that we get very little of. And something that I did not mention earlier is Antler is actually based off of a short story called The Quiet Boy, which is originally published in January of 2019. This story, there is differences. I read it after watching the movie, and there are differences. Truly, I like the ending of the short story better. But there are differences. It's not a family dynamic. The sexual assault that I mentioned is not in it at all. And I feel like the things that were added to this movie, instead of just expanding the existing material, are what hinder the movie, and especially between Julia and Paul, because there is contention there and there are issues there, but it feels like we should know what's going on, and of course we have no clue. So at school, Julia asks Lucas to read his story, and he tells a story about the three bears. The thing is there are no words on his paper. It's just these drawings that are gruesome and very angular and almost angry looking, and they're beautiful, don't get me wrong, but they're also kind of haunting and scary. And he is just telling this story based off of his drawings. He says that he's going to tell a story about three bears: Big Bear, Little Bear, and Baby Bear. He says that Big Bear is supposed to take care of the little bears, but he lost his job, got sick, and his insides turned black. He says that Little Bear comes home and Big and Baby Bear are different. Big Bear is angry and they don't have any food or meat. Julia tells him that he's doing a very good job, and he just kind of creepily says, but they had each other. So later on, we see the bully named Clint. He opens up his backpack and he finds animal poop. And so he slams Lucas against the door and he's like trying to like shove the poop right by his face. So Julia breaks it up, takes him to the nurse to get checked out. Julia then gets Lucas's contact info and tries calling his home. We hear the phone ringing and see that it's aggravating something in the house, and we get like a view through the people where we see like this creepy little like creature's eye. And when the nurse is checking him out, we can see just how small he is. So Julia ends up leaving school and she sees Lucas walking home. He stops at the ice cream shop and looks in, and Julia walks up and asks if he wants to join her and buys him an ice cream. She tells him that it is her favorite vegetable and asks him if it's his too. And she explains to him that to her, ice cream is a vegetable. And so then because of that, she asks his favorite fruit. He says donuts. She says mine too. And then she says she also likes cheeseburgers as her favorite vegetable. She asks about Aiden and he asks her how she knows about him. She's like, teachers know all. And she asks if his brother is at home with his mom. So then Lucas says, well, if teachers know all, then you should know that she died. She tells him that her mom died too when she was 12. He tells her that he's 12. And he doesn't look 12 at all. Like, I was very surprised. Like, it makes sense with how independent he is that he's 12. But this kid looks like he has to be, like, 6 or 7. Like, he looks small. When in actuality, that's how old Aiden is. His little brother is 7. And so she's asking, like, is he in school with us? And he says, no, that he's with their dad. She asks if his dad teaches him what his dad does. Lucas ends up leaving, saying that he's finished his ice cream, and he tells her not to follow him anymore. So Lucas walks home and he stops when he sees an animal carcass. Julia ends up getting in her car and driving to Lucas's house, hoping to meet with his father. She goes to the front door and knocks, but it looks like no one is home, but the door pops open on its own. She goes inside and we hear like this growling sound. She says hello, there's more loud noises and growling. She ends up leaving and goes home to look over a drawing that Lucas had ripped up and threw away. Once she puts the pieces together, it's a person with like a bloody mouth with a little boy inside. Paul comes home scaring her and looks at the drawing, asks if it's from her old teaching job in California. She then randomly just looks at Paul and is like, you know, you have every right to resent me, I don't blame you. She says that she knows that he didn't understand, but she couldn't stay in the house, and she has spent her life dealing with leaving him. She says it's not been easy, and he says that he has spent his whole life praying she would come back, and walks away. And it is so random. I don't know if it's supposed to be, like, him saying, like, oh, that's from your old teaching job in California, that ain't gonna fly here. As if he's trying to say, like, she's big time, and now she's slumming it here, and so she needs to bring herself down to their level again. But you don't get that from that conversation at all. And so her comment just seems totally at random. And that's what I mean where this subplot seems very forced. And I honest to God just wish they would have cut all this out because this movie is so good. The storytelling is so good with the creature and all of that. Like, I didn't need any of this extra crap. This is the part where we have the sexual assault on a child. So if you do not want to listen to this, I completely understand, but this is where it starts. So Julia is sitting at the piano playing, and we see a man start walking up behind her. He ends up putting his hand on her shoulder, but then he starts sliding it across her chest and reaching a little further down. We realize it's her father, and we see flashes of her father laying naked on her bed crying. He ends up grabbing her throat, but then it reveals Paul is just grabbing her shoulder to get her attention because she's just been sitting there. And so he scares her. Her dad is not there. She's like crying for a second and is just very worked up. And that is that. That is the end of that scene. But it is a scene that catches you so off guard because, as you can see, it comes out of fucking nowhere. Just all of a sudden, naked. Like, just... And you learn a little bit more down the line, which I'll go ahead and explain. Their dad killed himself not too long ago. And so that's why she comes home, because she basically left as soon as she could. It's kind of implied that once their mother died, he latched onto the daughter in more ways than one, as far as like expecting her to do everything, but also treating her as if she was his spouse because he's sick and disgusting and just a terrible person. And so it's basically established she left, his brother was left with him, and then he killed himself recently, and so she came home to be with her brother because she's missed him and she's not felt like she could come home until this moment, till their dad is finally dead. And so that's how we, like, later on, because at first I was like, who the hell is this? Like, is this someone that's gonna constantly be, like, messing with her? Only to realize, no, he's actually dead. But of course, you don't find that out until later on, like, way later on in this movie. So I hate this whole subplot. This is the last that we will talk about this subplot, other than her mentioning at one point that she would hide, which we saw a clip of it earlier in the movie. She would hide underneath the floor in the kitchen to get away from him. Like, I guess, like, in a cellar. And so that's really the only time we mention anything like that. But as far as, like, the sexual assault implications, anything like that, like, that's done for the rest of the movie. Once she calms down, she asks Paul if he knows Frank, and he says that he's arrested him for selling, he's revived him countless times with Narcanan, and Paul says that he's tried to put him in jail, but there's no one left who can take care of the boys. After the mom died, the court said that he would be a decent caretaker. She tells him that the house looks empty, but there's something weird going on there, and Paul tells her she cannot go to Frank's house, and she says everyone acts like these problems are just gonna go away, but they won't. We cut back to Lucas, who's drawing with a flashlight. We hear Aiden asking for Lucas in tears at the door. He starts crying, and Lucas ends up putting on headphones to drown out the noise. The next day, Lucas is in the woods setting a trap when he hears something, and he looks out and we see it's former Sheriff Stokes who has found something in the woods. We cut to Julian. She's looking through Lucas's desk. She finds a Bible. She finds books on trapping animals, but then she also finds a book on dangerous spirits. She sees his drawing, and she ends up showing them to the principal, who is Principal Booth. Julia says this is textbook abuse, and Booth says that he is here and in a safe space. Booth says that there's a lot of children that are homeschooled to help move product, or so the school doesn't smell meth on their clothes. Julia says that this is all a cry for help. Booth tells her she'll reach out to his father the next chance that she gets. So Julia goes to the store. She's looking at the alcohol, but she ends up not buying anything because she's talked herself out of it. She walks out and sees Paul talking with Stokes. So Paul comes up and tells her that they found part of a man in the woods. The other part was found in the mine near a meth lab. So this is Frank's buddy. And they think that it was likely a cougar or something like that. So Paul leaves to go check out the body. His partner is Dan, who is played by Rory Cochrane from Empire Records, one of my favorite movies, Dazed and Confused, Oculus, which at some point we will cover because I love Oculus and I love him. So I'm so excited and I wish he had a bigger part. So Lucas is visiting with Aiden and he tells him that their dad said that God's dead. He feeds him some candies when Aiden starts crying and he's coughing up blood, and his tears are actually blood as well. His dad is kind of half laying in the floor, half like just slumped over, and his ribs are glowing like he has a fire in the inside of his chest. We see the mutilated body of Frank's friend, and this part is so graphic and so gross. He's literally just ripped limb from limb and is decaying and is just in pieces. Like, props to this special effects team, because this looked gnarly. And they're trying to figure out, you know, what could have done this. The doctors have no idea what could have caused this kind of damage. They're trying to figure out who it is and all this. So Principal Booth ends up arriving at the house to talk to Frank. We cut back to Julia's class where they see that they're watching a movie. And I guess it's like on an old projector, because there's a lot of like flashing between like the scenes, which is causing some really odd strobing effects. Lucas has his hands down in front of his desk, and we see that he's actually doing some woodworking and is carving out some sort of animal head. So Booth goes in the house and she's asking for Frank. The door pops open again, and the house apparently smells terrible with like the dead animals and all of that. And my question is, how does Lucas not smell? Like, we know that he washes his clothes because they talk about it. Maybe it's in the short story, because now that I've said that out loud, I cannot remember if it's in the short story or if it's in this movie where they talk about how he'll go to the laundromat and wash like the same clothes because he doesn't have a lot. So maybe that's why he doesn't smell. But like, I just kept thinking, like, how does he not smell like these animals he's killing and like all the decay? Because like, you see Aiden and he's filthy. Like, he is just covered in dirt and muck and probably blood. I don't know. Just grossness. But we finally see that Lucas is carving out something that's vaguely deer-like. And if you know what the creature possibly is, then you'll understand what he's carving. But I won't spoil it just yet. So Booth goes upstairs. She hears Aiden crying, she hears some growling. She sees all these locks on the door and decides to start opening them all. So she opens the door, the smell's worse. You realize that there's a door leading to the attic. So she goes upstairs again and she finds Aiden in the floor. And she's like, of course, like, you poor thing, like, let me take care of you. But then Frank comes up behind her and knocks her down. She's trying to crawl away, he's chasing after her, and it's kind of like this slinky, like, crawling. And we've discussed this. I hate crawling, and this just, I hated every moment of it. Like, until a few minutes from now where things change, like, Frank freaked me out throughout this entire, like, situation because of how he's just, like, growling and crawling all around and stuff. Like, it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. I did not like it. So he ends up crawling after her, and he grabs her arm and bites some of her fingers off, and then he rips out her throat, and it is so graphic and so bloody. But then we cut to Lucas, and Lucas has taken the teeth that are on this, like, creature that he's carved and shoves those teeth in his arm and is, like, bleeding. So we cut to Frank. He's convulsing, his chest is glowing, and he's, like, making these weird noises. And he opens his mouth and a horn starts coming out. We cut back to the mine. So Paul is asking about the bags hanging from the ceiling of the mine, and Stokes say that they are wards. There's also one in the door of the attic where Frank and Aiden were. And they find antlers on the ground, and Dan asks if it's a buck, and Stokes says no and takes it with him. So Lucas is walking home when he hears an animal cry out. He goes towards the sound, and then Clint comes out and of course calls him a gay slur. And like, can we not do this shit anymore? It is 2021. I don't want to hear this in movies. This shit is so old and played out. Like, I don't want to hear a kid bully saying gay slurs. I don't want to see adult bullies calling people gay slurs. Like, can you not just call someone a piece of shit? In a movie? Like, can you not call someone an asshole in a movie? Like, why do you have to say slurs? Like, is it to hype up their intensity and their villainous? So Lucas ends up walking away from him. Clint's like, don't you walk away. Well, then suddenly Lucas sees something with antlers standing in front of him and he runs away. The creature attacks Clint and kills him. So Lucas runs home and sees Principal Booth's car. He goes upstairs, sees the destruction, basically sees that they're free. So then we get to Paul, who asks Julia when she last saw Booth. Julia's like, I saw her yesterday when I talked to her about Frank and Lucas. Paul tells her that Booth is missing. We cut to Lucas, who's outside covering up her car with a tarp. Paul and Dan are at the house trying to get in touch with Frank. Dan says that the house smells like death. They've missed Lucas, like, hiding this car because he's already done by the time they arrive. And so they're saying, you know, we'll get a search warrant tomorrow to go into this house, and they leave. We then see it's the next day at school. Paul is talking with Clint's mom, who is reporting him as missing. Paul saying that it's likely all a coincidence. Julie gets pissed off and leaves. She tells him that this is all related. He's like, we're getting a warrant. This takes time. So what does she do? She goes to Lucas's house. And of course, where she'd been previously there, when she gets there, she sees that there's a new car. So she uncovers it with the tarp, realizes that it's Booth's car. We then cut immediately to the police there taking photos of Booth and Frank's bodies. Frank's body looks like it's basically been burned from the inside out. Lucas comes home to see police everywhere because it's nighttime. Julia grabs him and says that they have to take him to the hospital. So the doctors are like, he's a deeply damaged boy. He's in a psychiatric crisis. He was abused. Paul's like, we cannot take him in. Julia says there's no one, they have no idea where his brother is. He's like, it's not your job to do this. And she tells him, you know, he doesn't have family, he's my student, this does fall on me. So then Paul tells her, this is not about you, this is about him. He tells her not to put their past on Lucas. She asks if their dad snapped his arm in two, and did he force him to hide under the floor praying he'd never come back, or force him to do his every whim. Paul looks at her and says that you have no idea what he did to me. She walks away and again, wish this had been cut out. Because again, it's like, I get the point where he's trying to say, like, just because you have trauma does not mean that you can save this little boy. Like, don't kill yourself trying to take care of this kid because we don't have the means to do it. Like, I get that. But it goes from 0 to 180, because, like, he's saying, like, don't project your trauma onto him, and she's, like, blaring about her trauma now. So I just feel like, again, wish all this was cut out. Spoilers for my least favorite part of this movie. It is this extra shit. So we go back to when Frank first started changing, so when they got back from the mines 3 weeks ago. He tells the boys that he's sick, he's locked himself in the attic. He starts setting up the padlock, saying he's sick. He tells them to lock the door and no matter what, to not open it. Well, then we see where Lucas realizes that Aiden too is sick and Frank pulls Aiden into the attic. And we then see why Lucas put on the headphones when Aiden started calling to him, because apparently at one point they both start banging on the door trying to get to him because they want to eat him, basically. And so they're trying to use Aiden as a trap to get Lucas to open the door so they can feed. And so he's screaming, and it's just so much happened in that 3 week span that, like, I wish we could have seen. Like, take out all this backstory trauma shit for Julia and Paul. Let's watch it all happen. Like, be upfront with what's going on. I don't know. Julia and Paul end up going to see Stokes, and they're trying to find out what he knows and where this stuff is coming from. So Julia takes the drawings and she says that a student has drawn them, and he asks if the student is a native. She's like, no, and he's asking, how can that be? And he grabs a book along with the antlers. The book shows a Wendigo, which is exactly what I expected when we ever saw this trailer for the first time. I was pumped then, I'm pumped now. It says that legend says, during a hard winter, a man was driven to cannibalism, and after that, he became crazed and changed into a spirit that could take many forms. He would roam through the forest for different bodies to take. Paul dismisses all of it as a story. Stokes says that feasting makes them hungrier, but that's when they're in their weakest state, is once they have fed, and they can be killed in that weakened state by crushing their heart. The spirit will then look for a new host. Stokes says that it was here before them, and that it will be there a long time after them. So then Paul gets a call. They have found Clint's body. Paul and Dan are discussing what could possibly be causing this. Paul tells Julia that regardless of what Stokes says, there has to be a logical explanation. Julia goes to the hospital to get Lucas. Dan's watching the house. So Julia ends up telling Lucas, you know, I told you about my mom. Well, my dad died too. He did it to himself. She says that she's now here to be with her brother and that she missed him. We see clips of Dan on the porch while they're talking. He's hearing a strange sound, so he starts looking around. At this point, Julia it seems odd to me because she just kind of all of a sudden asks him if they told him at the hospital. And he's like, told me what? She's like, oh, your dad's dead. Like, no compassion, no nothing, just your dad's dead. And of course, he denies it. And she's like, no, he is. You know, my brother found him. He's dead. And Lucas is like, no, that's my old dad. He was sick. My new dad needs me. My new dad needs to feed him, and he's going to come for me. So that's when we cut back to Dan outside, who hears something and realizes that the sound is coming from the shed. Lucas starts showing Julia his drawings, and he's saying, you know, my dad's going to come for me, and he's going to take me into the mines to be with Aiden. They hear a strange noise. Lucas tells her that he's here. So then Dan radios to Paul and tells him that something is in the shed. Paul leaves and rushes to his house. He calls Julia on the house phone, but she's not answering it because her and Lucas are starting to hide because they hear this sound. Dan goes into the shed and finds Aiden hiding. But Aiden, again, is just a trap. So just like when he would cry for Lucas, Dan goes to radio to Paul when antlers go through his chest. Julia goes to grab a gun. They're all locked up, as they should be. They end up hiding in the room when Paul drives up. He goes to the shed and he sees Dan's body on the ground when Lucas also takes off. So now Julia is alone. Paul walks in the shed and tries to get Dan to get up. He goes to Aiden, but the Wendigo ends up knocking him across the shed. Paul kind of sits up and he goes to call for backup while laying against the wall when he hears something behind him, and then the Wendigo slams through the wall and catches him in the body with the antlers. This part, now I did not like that it repeated how Dan got caught from the Wendigo, but this scene scared the shit out of me in the theaters. Like, I jumped so hard. Like, it was one of those visceral, like, my entire body, like, I felt flushed. Like, it scared the shit out of me. It was so loud and, like, expected, but also unexpected. So Paul ends up grabbing a gardening tool because he's, like, stuck in the wall and kind of stuck in him. And he's hitting him over and over until you hear it whining. And finally, it takes off. So then Paul kind of falls over, but then the Wendigo hits him again with his antlers. Julia comes outside. She goes to Paul. Hears the Wendigo yell. She tells Paul she has to move him, and she starts sliding him over away from the hole, like where they're, you know, kind of protected a little bit more. And she tells him that the boys are in the mine, and she has to go find him. Paul's like, you're not going by yourself. I want to go with you, which, how the fuck? She's, like, barely able to lift him off the ground, hobbling, carrying him to the car, and they drive to the mines. So Julia goes in. She's going through it. She eventually finds Lucas and Aiden. Lucas tells her, you know, you gotta go back. She looks over and sees the Wendigo is just eating a bear. So he's feeding. And it's actually wearing Frank's face. Like, the skin is just hanging over, like, the front of the Wendigo's face. And it is wicked. And it's so gruesome. And you're just like, oh, God. Like, it's one of those moments that when you see it, like, you gasp. And you're just like, ugh. It's wicked. I loved every bit of this. Like, I thought it was so cool. So it stands up to its full height. It's huge. And its antlers, it's not like a traditional, like a deer antler. It's like, kind of like elkish, but there's so many of them, like, stacked all together. Like, it's crazy looking. I loved the look of this. So she shoots at it a few times. She lights a flare to keep it back. She ends up getting a pipe from the ground and stabs it in the chest. It's trying to swipe at her. She stabs it again. It rips the pipe out because she, like, stabs it in him. He rips the pipe out and starts coming towards her when Lucas has a knife and stabs it in the back. So it collapses to the ground. Julia grabs the knife and cuts open its chest to get its heart out. And the heart looks like just this ball of fire, and she like crushes it. Once it's dead, Aiden starts screaming and making those weird sounds, and they turn and look, and he's convulsing and his chest is glowing. So he's about to be next. So then Julia grabs the knife. She goes up to Aiden. Lucas is trying to stop her, and he's like, he's okay. He's just sick. And she tells him that Aiden is never going to get better and that it's too late for him. Lucas promises that he'll be better, and Julia tells him that he knows that he won't be better and that she needs him to understand. She tells him to look away. She grabs Aiden, who is like screaming and yipping and making these super creepy sounds. She takes the knife, apologizes, and we see her start to stab him in the back. So she basically off screen stabs him and then rips out his heart. So now Paul and Julia are at the waterfront. It's the next morning. They're discussing what to do with Lucas. Julia says they don't have a choice but to keep him. Paul's like, he's a tiger cub with what he's been through. We don't know what he'll grow into. Lucas comes from the water and Julia like wipes his face. And I have no idea what she's wiping off his face or what he was doing. Makes me feel like he was like eating a fish or something raw. Like, I don't know. But she ends up taking him and they're, you know, heading on. Paul starts coughing. He's like, no, I'll catch up. Y'all head to the truck. But his back is to the camera. Well, then he finally turns around. And when he does, we see that he's crying blood. And he's coughing up blood, too. So now the spirit is in him. And that's the movie. So with the short story, I loved the short story. I thought it was really creepy. I can see how it became this. Like, I can see why they made it a movie, because it's so good. And you can still find it online. It's still completely free to read. Please go read it. It's so good. I'm going to spoil the ending, so be ready. But in the story, the house is hers. She lives in this town. Paul is not a character other than just, like, a police officer. Which I don't even know if his name is Paul in the short story. It's been a minute. So she brings Lucas home, and she's going to feed him, so she orders pizza. And when the pizza guy gets there, that's when they realize the Wendigo is there. So the Wendigo gets attacked. And then you, like, they go to stop him and you see a report where she's missing. And so it's basically, like, likelihood that Lucas is with his dad and Aiden and she's dead. And it's kind of, like, open-ended. And I wish that we would have had that ending. Because, again, I hate all the stuff with her brother and the trauma and all of that. I want a Wendigo movie. And I think that this had such good source material. I would have loved to have gotten more than like a 5-second explanation about the Native American history of a Wendigo. And like, I wish all the extra subplot shit had been taken out, because it's so good what we do see. And the way the creature looks is incredible. Yeah, well, I did really like this movie. There are a lot of faults. So our closing segment for Terror Tea is the high tea and the low tea. The high tea of the moment is the action-packed moment, maybe adds a bit of the scare, my favorite part, the biggest jump scare. Whereas the low tea is the lesser part of the film, or even my least favorite. So for Antler, my low tea has to be, no surprise, I've said it the entire movie review, the subplots. I wish every bit of that had been lifted out, because it wasn't in the original story, and you can tell that it's not part of this story, because it is so just, it's not handled well, it's not explained well, it is too, like, parts of it are extremely blunt and unneeded and uncomfortable, and there's things later on where they're explaining parts of it, and you're just like, I know nothing about this, like, why are you guys all of a sudden coming for each other, like, I don't know. So I wish that all of that would have been lifted and we could have gotten more of the folklore. I would have loved to have seen all of that crap lifted out. And instead of us jumping 3 weeks, let's watch him turn. Like, let's watch Frank. Let's watch us discover that Aiden is also sick. And what's happening to Aiden, too? Because what is this doing to a child? Because Aiden seems perfectly fine throughout most of this movie until the end, when he's actually becoming the Wendigo, which it took 3 weeks and so many days for Frank to actually completely transform too. So like, what was the Wendigo that attacked them? Who was that? Did they kill it? Where'd he come from? Like, I want to know more. So, I don't know. My high tea has to be the little boy. He is so, the little boy that plays Lucas, he is so creepy. Your heart breaks for him because you just think that he's a victim of his circumstances, and he's so sweet and he's strong for what he's done. Like, this little actor, which I say little actor because he's like 12, older now, but like, he did so good. He's such a high point. Also, the special effects team is incredible. The way this Wendigo looks is terrifying, when the skin is just hanging down and then it rips it off. Like, it is, it's great. I absolutely love the way the Wendigo looks, and the way that the victims' bodies look afterwards, just it's so good and so gross. So what do you think? Have you guys seen Antlers? Love it, hate it? Let me know all your thoughts. You can find me all over social media. I'm on Twitter at @terror_t, over on Instagram at @terror.t. We're on Facebook. We have a Terror Tea group. You can catch horror news, among other things, over there. Come join us. If you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you really like it, leave me a 5-star review. Again, I am your host, Tara, and this has been Terror Tea.